Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour, September 3rd, 2015. A couple notes on health to begin with. In talking with people over the last couple weeks, it just seems interesting. These are listeners, and I've gotten the same feedback more than a few times. On a show, I was talking about grounding. Actually, a topic I believe I covered an entire show, and I think I carried it possibly into a second show. But the term grounding refers to basically connecting electrically to the earth. And the most common way of doing this is to basically walk barefoot in the morning dew on grass. And so you go out in the yard and walk around the morning dew. And now, what is the dew? The dew is the moisture in the air that falls at night. And what happens is the air cools during the nighttime. The moisture condenses and falls out of the air. And so that's why you end up with a nice clear night sky early in the morning. If you go out and look at the stars, that's when the air is the cleanest. It's got all of that water out of there. But that water falls down and basically covers everything with a little layer of liquid. In the fall, it can, or the springtime, it can turn into frost, which is a very interesting effect also. But basically, in the spring, summertime, etc., fall, early fall, it would be in the form of liquid water, little droplets of water, all over your lawn. And so if you walk around in that, now what does that do? It gives you a nice, even electrical connection, and water is a good transmitter of electrical signaling. And so basically what you're doing is you're connecting your body electrically through your feet to the ground. And so the ground, the earth, has an electrical frequency called the Schumann frequency, and it has many other vibration modes. So by simply walking in the morning dew, you're connecting with the earth, and literally we are very electrical people, human race or animals. We are connected to the stars, we're connected to the other planets. Our bodies are large antennas. And I've talked about this many times. In the mid-1990s, my work was central to some investigations that happened in central Russia. As the atmospheric scientists were milling through my work and having daily conferences, the psychology department at the University of Novosibirsk also met and studied my work as it was being translated. And they were studying electronic reactions and people, and they found the purest way to measure this was in the unborn fetus. So they had electrical sensors on the moms, etc., measuring the reactions of the unborn babies. And what happened is they realized that they were reacting to electrical alignments with the planets, but of course they weren't quite sure the electrical nature of all of this. That's where my work came in. And they understood that there was an empirical relationship between positions of the stars in the solar system and the planets, and other things like comets, etc., full moon, new moon. And so it was basically the understanding that the body is an antenna picking up all of these electrical signals. And that's also why it's extremely bad to be immersed in microwaves as we are today, and also in the high voltage signal lines. I was just talking with a gentleman this week who had worked for his entire life working around high tension, high voltage power lines. And he had mentioned, too, that he could predict the weather. This was very interesting. He could predict the weather by listening to the tone of the hum on the high voltage transmission lines. These are the high voltage lines that carry the electrical power across country, through the countryside, etc. But he could tell and predict the weather by the changes in the frequency and the sound on the electrical wires. And of course, that had to do with the electrical wires interacting with the atmosphere. And as the atmosphere conditions changed, the music, so to speak, the vibrational frequencies that were transmitted into the air off of those high voltage lines would change. And so very interesting. But back to the idea of health, healthy living. Good food is so hard to find today. It just, you know, the only place you're going to find it is at your local co-op, where they're accepting food that is grown locally. Your water that you have to actually purify yourself or filter. Exercise, mental health, good balance, and then also simply the people around you, you treating them well and them treating you well. Sometimes families can be some of the most cruel people around. And so anyway, but back to the idea of grounding. So back to my original story. These people said that they were actually going out every day, based on my mentioning this on the show, and walking in the morning dew. One woman was saying she does her yoga in the dew in the yard every day. So very interesting. I will be doing hopefully a bit more in the future on health issues. There's just so many topics for me to cover. A listener asked this week the following question. With the new GF filter elements, these are the ones that take out all the chemicals in the chemicals that are in the water, in the filter itself. In other words, they do not require an add-on filter to chemically remove impurities that are in molecular solution. Now, understand there's, when we talk about filters, filters literally trap particles that are big, to stop them from flowing in through the filter, and then purify your water in that sense. But also the chemicals that are in solution are much too small, and they will pass through the porosity of the gravity water filter. And by the way, gravity water filtration is the best method. It's slow, relatively slow, but you get a much better filtered product. The water is much better filtered when it moves slowly. The same type of filtration systems can be used under high pressure, like line pressure, 90 pounds per, up to 90 pounds per square inch, like you have in your line with your at your house. But unfortunately, the water passes through, and they're not as effective as a gravity water filter that is simply slow because of the virtue of the fact that it's slow. You're not trying to force the water through too quickly. The other thing is that there are various levels of, well, let's call it non-uniformity in any filter. I don't care how great your process is, whatever. Some areas are not going to have a larger gap than others. And, of course, you try and avoid this. But under high pressure, those regions of larger porosity have more propensity to move, allow the water to pass through there. So it's not filtered quite as well as in a gravity feed system where it's slower, it's more methodical, and not under pressure. But anyway, back to the listener's question. He said, do you clean and then store, clean, dry, and store the used GF filters? These are the new filters that take out, that have the chemical removing properties right in the 7-inch candle. Do you clean, dry, and store these like you do with the old ones? And the answer is yes. Now, here's the deal. The reason you're storing these old spent filters is for a rainy day, so to speak, a day when there's emergency and you don't have access to nice new, brand new filters. So you store up, and if you use a lot of filters, of course, you're not going to store up dozens and dozens of these. Well, you could. But remember to dry them out thoroughly. It's best not to store them in sealed plastic because of condensation. and then store them in a dry place, in a place where it doesn't get a lot of change in temperature and away from light. And the reason you keep it away from light is because in the daytime, that causes a little bit of heat. At the nighttime, it cools down. And that change in temperature is what causes condensation. And condensation means water. And water destroys everything. So you want to keep your filters in a nice dry place where the temperature is even all year round if possible, or as much as possible. In the cupboard would be fine, down below where you have a fairly constant temperature. But yes, you do clean them up, save them, dry them out good and save them, because even though the ability to extract chemicals would be all used up, you can still clean them with a Scotch-Brite pad. That's my favorite thing to clean the filters with, just a brand new Scotch-Brite pad. I keep one in the kitchen just for cleaning filters. That's the, and it's there, and when I clean the filter elements, just scrub them very lightly. They come back to that nice white color, and you know that they're ready to filter at maximum capacity again. But yes, you do keep them, because in an emergency, they will still filter out the bacteria, silt, gunk, etc., and that's way better than not having a filter element at all. So yes, you do save them, dry them out, and save them for a rainy day, so to speak. Microsoft Windows 10. They may as well just call it NSA 10. Don't put it in your computer. Do not put Windows 10 on your computer. It is full of viruses, and well, basically, you wouldn't technically call them viruses, but they're basically backdoors for the NSA to come in and just wholesale snoop on everything that you do any time of day or night. So anyway, yeah, Windows 10, none of the Windows products are good in that respect, but unfortunately, in this world of mass computers, etc. Now, by the way, if this is a giant opportunity for some intelligent young programmers to take and build a brand new operating system that looks and acts just like Windows, but it's not Windows. In other words, the internals, when you pull up an application or link into an application, it acts like Windows, but not able to be taken over from outside like Windows. Anyway, once again, Windows 10, no, don't go there. Do yourself a big favor. A few weeks ago, it was August 24th, I had an interview with a guy named James Fetzer, and well-known, he was a professor at the University of Minnesota, and now he resides in Madison, Wisconsin, at the University, I believe, in Madison, Wisconsin, the University of Wisconsin, head of the Scholars for 9/11 Truth Movement, and many other efforts. He has a show called The Real Deal, and I was a guest on there. I've been a guest on there a couple times now, but on the 24th of August, you should go and listen to that interview. Very, very good interview. But during the interview, I mentioned Stephen Hawking and how that when I released my book, The Diamond Principle, when I was on Coast to Coast AM, I released my book, The Diamond Principle, and I was all set up to go on the full evening, full interview that night, and they stick this guy on with me, and not Stephen Hawking, but another guy. But anyway, a week later, literally 1 week later, and of course, let me preface this by saying that my book, The Diamond Principle, was about the obvious organization of the universe, and that it follows the design of a grand design or a god or any of those terms that refer to overall design of the universe by a higher being, power, etc. And this, by the organization, you in fact would understand that there was a design. Just like if you saw a bridge or a big building, and I came up to you and I said, did that building have a designer? Was there a chief engineer here involved? And you'd go, well, of course. You know, that was built to standards and it's got to withstand the weather and the wind and the all of the elements and hold up all the cars and do train whatever crosses this bridge. So clearly it had a designer, and or a big building the same way. And how could you look at the universe with the infinitely complex design where the atoms on this side of the universe act the same as the atoms on the other side of the universe? Everything is consistent. It's not random, hodgepodge, thrown together bunch of gobbledygook. This is a very well-organized universe we live in. It may not seem, it may seem a bit violent, but even that, the violence of the universe is even part of the plan, so that it can mix and grow. I mean, that's just part of the overall plan. But the point is that a week after my book, The Diamond Principle, came out, Stephen Hawking allegedly came out with his book saying exactly the opposite. Now, clearly, there's some philosophical differences here in the science world. And today, the science world is being run and operated by atheists, people that think, oh, this just all happened at random, and we're so intelligent, we can understand things like black holes and, you know, the Big Bang, and there's no need for God. So they have Hawking saying in this new book that that there's no need for a God. And what I pointed out was that in Stephen Hawking's very last publication that we know he wrote himself by his own hand, and his very last statement in the end of that book was the A Brief History of Time. The very last statement in the summary at the end of the book says, our greatest scientific achievement would be to understand the workings of the universe so that it would bring us closer to understanding the Creator. It was something that's paraphrased, but essentially that. So how could they, a couple years later, come out with him apparently writing a book, or allegedly writing a book, that stated exactly the opposite? Now, if you understand, Stephen Hawking is in a wheelchair and is unable to move. And there was a time when he was able to move a joystick with his mouth, but now he's just completely invalid. I've questioned this a number of times, that the comments that are being made in the stead or in the place of Stephen Hawking are being manipulated. Is this really him speaking? So anyway, after I made this statement, the questioning whether these writings, so-called writings of Stephen Hawking were legitimate and real, a couple days later, there's a surprise appearance of Stephen Hawking in Switzerland at a scientific meeting, an impromptu scientific meeting with a little peanut gallery there of scientists. And he's talking about a problem that in kind of a conceptual problem in relativity dealing with black holes, that what happens to information? In other words, if there's a stream, say a radio signal or a bit stream of information that goes into a black hole, what happens to the information? And it's somewhat of a esoteric question. And he claimed to have solved this by saying that the information flows around the event horizon, which is around the circular outside. And this is all theoretical. I don't personally believe in black holes. I don't believe in general relativity, and actually neither did Einstein. Towards the end of his life, he stated that general relativity was not true. So at any rate, they come up with Stephen Hawking, and at the meeting, it lasted about 20 minutes. Stephen Hawking is sitting in his wheelchair with his head over to the side and not moving at all, and then they have a computerized voice talking as him, and he comes out, and the first thing he says is, "Can you hear me?" And the audience kind of looks around, they go, yeah. They kind of mumble, yeah. Because he isn't moving. He's not doing anything. It's a computerized voice, allegedly being him speaking. But then it says that he will come out with a paper towards the end of September to publish with his results. Well, first of all, you don't ever come out and say that you have some kind of result and you're going to publish it in 5 weeks, because that means that this is, I'm speaking of the peer-reviewed journal world, because it has to go through peer review. So there's no guarantee that anything's going to get published at all, even if it's Stephen Hawking's, if it's supposed to go through peer review. And so that's one cue that this was a fake. And the second cue is that I believe there were some people listening to James Fetzer and myself questioning the ability of Hawking's to make public statements. And now this is something they've been relying on, because everybody seems to click when they hear the name Stephen Hawking's, not realizing that he is incapable of making any sounds, of talking, or from the best that I can tell, of communicating in any manner. So what they're trying to do is put words in his mouth. And to the end of the established scientific community. Now, how is this problem relative to the event horizon and information problem in general relativity? How is this related to the politics of science? Well, they want to maintain the Big Bang concept, and black holes is a very big part of that. It's really been under attack a lot lately, and I've been pounding on this myself since I was at Cornell in 1979. I was very much adamant that general relativity didn't work. And in my course, the DVD number 4, the University Level Astronomy, Astrophysics, Space Science course, I go through and I spend quite a bit of time talking about the fact that general relativity is not true, and that there is another explanation for what we're seeing in outer space relative to the cosmos. Anyway, the point is that I thought it was interesting that really you hadn't heard anything from Stephen Hawking for really a long time. The minute James Fetzer and myself start discussing the viability of Hawking's making public statements, here he is in an international meeting in Switzerland at an impromptu science meeting talking about solving a problem that nobody really had thought about or put much time on since probably around 1962 was the last time anybody made a public statement about this. And the comments coming in from the other scientists that work in this area was that they really doubted if he had truly found a solution, because there's a lot of boundary conditions, etc., on the solution. So at any rate, it's just kind of an interesting quirk there that all of a sudden he appears on the scene after a long period of relative silence. I got some conversation with a listener this past week, and I really have not had time to go into this and study it sufficiently, but there appears to be some studies, and I'm only going to basically outline this on this show and come back and cover this topic later in more depth, talking about thyroid conditions in the human body and how the thyroid, based on GMO food, grains, and other foods that are basically eaten by the general public today, that your thyroid is under attack. And talking about sugar poisoning and other conditions leading to cancer with women especially. But anyway, that's a topic I'm going to be looking a bit into a bit more. Hopefully has some more in-depth coverage of that in weeks to come. A quick mention about the wing generator. It's progressing. I don't have a final date when it'll be released yet, but there's a lot of detailed work going on in the background. I'll just say that, and as soon as that is publicly available, all of you will certainly hear about it. I want to mention carrot bars. This is becoming very interesting. A number of weeks ago, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on any more shows talking about this, other than the fact that I am more interested in this now than I ever was before. And now I started this, a number of weeks ago. It's grown significantly, but the thing that now I'm encountering is I'm talking to a lot of people. I'm talking to a lot of people who have joined Carrot Bars. And what is a carrot bar? It's gram quantities of gold inlaid in a small credit card sized card. Basically, it's a way for the common man to invest in gold, because gold is an ounce of gold running around $1,100 to $1,200 an ounce these days. Most people, the common people, don't have the kind of money, and typically you don't go buy one gold coin. You could, you know, some people, I've heard of people that on their way home from work every Friday, they stop at their favorite place and they buy a gold coin. Well, once a month or once every 2 months. That's nice, but it's not really spendable. What do you do with it? It's just kind of there. It's an inert piece of material, and unless you trade it back in for the fiat currency that's in your country, then it's really not very useful. It's not very spendable. And carrot bars is a very spendable commodity. But anyway, at the top of my webpage, jmccsci.com, is the link and all the information. So I'm not going to go over that again. But once again, what I'm finding out is I talk to people that they are very interested. And so, I mean, I can present a topic to people, but like you say, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. But in the case of carrot bars, people are jumping all over this, and because it's a way for you to transfer your fiat dollars into spendable exchange with the gold right in the cards in their carrot bar coins. And these are based on a gram each of gold, which right now is running around $50, let's say, for a gram. And so that's, you know, more or less that's the going price. I think in U.S. dollars, they're probably more like $60 a gram. But they're spendable. You can spend them through a credit card that comes with it. It's actually a debit card, not a true credit card. But it's a MasterCard debit card. Also, you get an e-wallet that comes with it. So this is very spendable, where you can move the money between your bank account, between carrot bars, between your MasterCard. So it's very mobile, and very soon I will be personally taking carrot bars for my business, for water filters, for my books, or whatever else is going on. And it's just my view, it's the way of the future. I would rather have somebody give me some carrot bars with gold in it than a couple worthless dollar bills or $20 bills or whatever. Certainly, I'd rather have the carrot bars. So as fast as I can get set up, I will be taking carrot bars. But like I say, my real focus this week in mentioning it is just how excited you out there, the public, are about this topic. That finally you have something you can put your worthless dollars into. And then in the future, I mean, gold's been around for over 5,000 years as the monetary staple of exchange, and it's going to be around for another 5,000 years, you know, or in long into the future. Anyway, enough of that, but go to my webpage once again, jmccsci.com. Also, just a quick mention, I've been doing a number of interviews on the Hale-Bopp Planet X release that came out July 23rd. I just want to mention, if you have not gotten your copy of that, there's still a couple ways to get it. You can buy it for $24.95, or you can get it free with a purchase of over $250 worth of any combination of products on my sales page. But really, really an important, a very important discovery, and that release is literally the most important and significant and real information regarding the topic of Planet X that has come around in literally 25 years. Very important information. Just a quick comment, and this is because I was asked to comment on a number of radio shows, which I still may be doing. But I've somewhat passed this information off through other people who are kind of bird-dogging this topic. But there was an alleged shooting of a woman named Allison Parker. And there's supposedly a guy walks up, and you can see this in the video. It looks like he's holding his cell phone. Walks up. All of a sudden, the gun appears, and he starts firing off shots at this woman, Allison Parker, who's a news reporter. She's Allison Parker is interviewing this lady regarding what apparently is some kind of tourist attraction or something. They're trying to get notoriety, and then the cameraman is there, and he's got his back to the whole thing. You really never see him other than his back, and he's filming this, and she's interviewing this lady, and all of a sudden this guy comes out and he starts bam, bam, bam with this gun. But the problem is, no bullets ever hit this Allison Parker lady. She's got this loose-fitting, kind of silky, one of those, woman's blouse. And there's no bullets hitting that. And this is like he's shooting from, maybe 5-8 feet away. It's hard to tell. Maybe 10 feet away. And there's no bullets hitting her. There's no reaction. The thin blouse, this thin material blouse is not moving at all. There's no bullet holes going through it. There's no blood. She's not reacting. She's not falling down to the ground. She literally turns and screams and runs away. And then you never see anybody shot or being hit by bullets and falling to the ground. Then the camera kind of goes dead and you hear some more shots. So in a court of law, this could not be used for anything because there's nobody shot. There's no evidence of anybody being shot. But what I contributed was the fact that when the shots were fired, the shooter's hand lurches forward. Now, I don't care what kind of gun you're shooting, whether it's a rifle or a handgun or whatever. This was a handgun. The ejection of the bullet is going to throw the firearm backwards or up. Typically, the barrel will come up. In this case, every time a shot was fired, the guy had to raise the gun back up to fire the next shot. And so this is typical of somebody who is overreacting, someone who had shot that gun before with real live rounds in it, and as a way to compensate for that kick, it's kind of a automatic reaction to push your hand into it, or if it's a rifle, to put some force into the firearm so that it doesn't, to kind of brace for that kick that the gun has to have, and even on the gas-operated or the counter-loaded weapons, like in some handguns, there's still a kick that comes back. Simply physics. It's going to recoil, but in this case, the gun lurches forward. But like I say, that's an indication that this shooter had experience with that gun, had shot real bullets from that gun, and was reacting. So these were blanks being fired off, and as the shooter shot the blanks, would react to what would normally be a bullet coming out of there and the gun coming back. But since there was no bullet, since it was a blank, the gun lurches forward with the overreaction of the shooter. And so, and like I say, there was no shooting, there was no... and so it turns out that the girl's boyfriend, Dad, is big on the anti-gun movement. And so the first thing he comes out, and he doesn't even say, I'm sorry this happened to his alleged girlfriend. The first thing he says, we got to get rid of guns. It's like, oh, man, unbelievable. They are doing everything possible to influence the public. And every time they have one of these shootings now, people see right through it. This is all planned Hollywood stage, but really bad, bad acting. Done by people who, really don't know what they're doing. Bunch of rank amateurs. Okay, so I'm going to spend this show talking about severe weather. This last week, we had a boatload of bad weather related to some very interesting conditions in the solar system, and I got called in on Monday morning on the Joyce Riley Show as for about 20 minutes. I discussed this weather work, and 20 minutes really wasn't enough time, so I'll continue with that discussion right now. But here's basically what happened. The thing that was somewhat newsworthy is that there were three Category 4 hurricanes in the Pacific Ocean all at the same time, and you could see them, one on both sides of the islands of Hawaii and then one farther west moving out into the western Pacific off towards Australia. But three Category 4 hurricanes in the Pacific Ocean at the same time. We've seen up to five hurricanes in the Atlantic at one time. Remember, 1999, Floyd was the first of five hurricanes, and that was something I predicted. But let me go through the conditions that were responsible for this last week's severe weather. Now, first of all, you have to understand that severe weather in August is not unusual. August is the time we have the return current sheet that comes back as part of the solar system electrical balance. And what happens, basically, there's an excess current of protons in the solar wind. It pushes out. There's a large capacitor, positive side of the capacitor, that's out beyond the orbit of Pluto. It's a donut nebula, and I've shown pictures of this in my book, Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes. I know there's a picture of this in my weather book. There's a picture of this. And every star has one of these nebular ion clouds surrounding it, every fusion star. In fact, the galaxy, which is also a fusion object, has this. So basically, the excess current coming out in that current balance, to balance the current, there has to be a return current sheet that comes back in towards the sun, and that is part of the electrical circuit of the entire solar system. That return current sheet, I discovered, comes back to the sun along a path where Earth passes through in around the month of August. That's why our hurricane season peaks in the month of August. That's why our aurora season peaks in the month of August on both the North and the South Pole. And the tornado season peaks. We also have a kick of tornadoes, oddly enough, in February. But you notice that's exactly the opposite side of the year as August. But at any rate, August is the major month for tornadoes, hurricanes, typhoons, auroras, aurora borealis, etc. And there's a reason for that. That's because we're locked in this reverse current sheet, and so there's a lot of electrical activity. Now, couple that with some other activity. Venus, the planet Venus, our innermost neighbor from our position around the sun, Venus had an inferior conjunction with Earth on the 19th of August. Okay, well, that would be significant, but the 19th, none of these storms existed then. So why is there a connection here? Well, Venus began on the 19th to have an electrical connection with Earth, and as Venus moved forward in its orbit, it moves faster around the sun than Earth, so Venus is moving forward. Around the 25th, only about a number of days later, Venus connects into a solar filament coming out in the solar wind. And now these filaments are different than the linear electrical alignments, which many times are very powerful. Those are the electron current sheet electrical alignments, the ones that are linear. The ones that Venus got connected into around the 25th of August was one of these. It looks kind of like a lawn sprinkler, if you can imagine the sun as the center of a lawn sprinkler, and it's spraying out these protons, so it kind of swings out in that kind of lawn sprinkler shape. Venus passes right through one of these, and its Earth is behind Venus in its orbit, but Earth is passing through the same plasma current sheet coming out from the sun as Venus. So this enhances our connection, our cross-solar system connection. So that's factor number one. First of all, simply the electrical connection between Venus and Earth. Then number two is the compact solar streamer that's arching out from the sun, connecting Earth to Venus. Number three, now this is very interesting and coincidental and almost serendipitous, but at number three, at the exact same time as Venus is connecting with Earth, actually a couple days earlier, there's a small comet that comes racing into the south from the south, crashes directly into the sun, and as it's coming in, you can start to see the sun pumping up in energy, the solar flaring increasing, and some of that solar flare activity connects into this same streamer that's connecting Venus to Earth, enhancing that. As I say, all very serendipitous, just a chance encounter, all of these factors adding up. So all of this increasing the Earth's discharge of the local solar capacitor that drives our weather. Now, Earth, at the same time, we have a full moon, and it's also a near perihelion full moon, which means perihelion is the closest point of the moon towards in its orbit to Earth. And so that makes it a much tighter connection with Earth electrically. That, and plus the fact that it's a full moon, also enhances the solar discharge of the solar capacitor by planet Earth. So that's factor number four. I already mentioned the factor number five is the August return current sheet, which dominates in the month of August. And the factor number six is that the solar wind it caused a magnetic reversal. No, this is all happening at the same time. Occasionally, the solar wind magnetic field, there's a magnetic field locked in the solar wind, came in the southerly direction. Our local geomagnetic field points north relative to Earth's spin, and in the northerly direction is our typical magnetic field, and this is the plasma magnetic field of Earth. The solar wind comes in with a reversed magnetic field, which is not real unusual. It's something that happens quite frequently. But it reverses the Earth's geomagnetic field, neutralizes it, and allows the solar wind to just come pounding in all the way down to Earth's surface, which, by the way, would have caused some severe X-ray conditions for even aircraft, especially aircraft up in the northern regions flying up around northern Europe, or the polar flights especially that fly over the North Pole to get between, say, New York City and Moscow or something. Those very much affected by these high-altitude X-ray conditions caused by the fact that we don't have a geomagnetic field protection layer out there anymore. Okay, but anyway, so the number six factor, the fact that solar wind reversed our magnetic field, all of these contributing, and I've got a couple pictures on my homepage, tremendous worldwide severe weather. And I've got a picture of the three, in the Pacific, they're called typhoons. They kind of loosely term them as hurricanes. But you can see many, 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 many other small storms that are out in the Pacific Ocean. I counted about 60 major storms. And there were, thousands of minor storms, squall-type storms moving around out there. So this is what caused this severe weather, very much attributable to natural phenomena. So at any rate, I probably will take a few minutes here and break apart each one of these so you can better understand the conditions in the solar system and how each one of these contributes to this severe weather. But first of all, I'm going to name some of these storms just so that you can identify these if you ever want to look them up and get the history on these storms. So this is the 2015 hurricane season in the Pacific. the IJK storms, in that order, Ignacio, Jimena, and Kilo are the three storms that we're talking about here, all Category 4 hurricanes at the same time. And Kilo kind of faded. This was the westernmost storm. And none of these storms really lasted a long time. They all kind of died out and faded away after this whole series of simultaneous factors occurred. In the Atlantic Ocean, we had Chantel was the first storm in, did a bit of damage out there. Then we had a hurricane called Erica, which did a lot of damage in the Dominican Republic. It came right over Dominican Republic. I saw videos of a lot of flooding there. Looked like a very severe flooding in the streets. And then finally, a Hurricane Fred. Now, Fred was very interesting in that it came off Africa as a hurricane. So, and if you looked at Africa during this, in fact, the entire world equatorial zone was just littered with severe storms. But what was interesting about Fred is typically when the storm systems roll off of Central Africa, right off of that little western nub of Africa where the storms roll off, these big thunderstorm systems move across the plains of Africa, and with lightning and tremendous storms, this is their rainy season, and then they move off into the Atlantic where they start to build up to become hurricanes, possibly halfway across the Atlantic. Fred rolls off of the Alaskan coastline, a full-fledged hurricane. So typically, this is very unusual weather, very unusual weather conditions. You wouldn't want to have been a sailor out in this region because literally there was no place to go. But anyway, those are the named storms. Now let me go back through some of these conditions again, and I'll give a little bit better idea of what these conditions are. Especially the inner solar system, the planets are relatively close compared to the outer planets from Jupiter on outwards, or actually from Mars on outwards. There's a big gap out to Jupiter where the asteroid belt is, and then there's a bigger gap to Saturn and out to Uranus and Neptune. It's some pretty open area out there. But the inner solar system, if you look, is relatively compact, and the planets move much faster. So anyway, quite frequently we have electrical interactions with Mercury. And so that's something you always want to keep an eye on, the electrical connections, as swift-footed Mercury, as it's called by the ancient Greeks, moves around and connects electrically with Earth. Venus was in a perfect electrical alignment with the Sun, so it's Sun, Venus, Earth, on August 19th. Okay, well, that's a very interesting period of time, because that's what leads up to the August 25th connection, which still is electrically connecting Venus to Earth. But here's the situation. In the electrical discharge of the solar path, of the solar capacitor, there are two aspects to the discharge. One is the positive part of the current, which is slow moving, the protons, the ions, etc., the positively charged ions, and then a bit of a negative ion movement also. But the bulk charge carrier in any of these discharges are electrons, simply because they have the highest charge to mass ratio. In other words, they have a tremendous amount of electric charge for the amount of mass that they have. Compared to a proton, an electron has 2,000 times the mobility, and that's based on the charge to mass ratio, 2,000 times the mobility. In other words, it's going to move 2,000 times faster in an electric discharge than the protons, and probably millions of times faster than ions. And so the electrons are the bulk charge carrier, and they discharge linearly. So on the 19th of August, we would have gotten a little blast of electrons from the sunward side due to the perfect electrical alignment of Venus and Earth. Okay, so that sets up the electrical connection, which stays with us for a number of days. But in this time period, Venus moves into this narrow but very active filament of solar wind plasma coming out of the sun. And it just, even though that's curved, it looks like a baseball pitcher's curve coming out of the sun. It's kind of curving. And like I say, the best analogy is like a lawn sprinkler. Earth just happens to connect into that filament at the same time as Venus. Very serendipitous. It's very, just that fact alone is a very unusual circumstance, that both would connect in, even though they're not in linear alignment anymore, they're both in the same solar wind filament. And then, okay, that's a very unusual situation, but that enhances Earth's weather quite a bit. Okay, then this compact solar wind streamer, that's factor number two, that just happened to connect with Venus and Earth and continue this electrical connection out into the August 25th time frame. Now the comet, little comet, just a little fireball of a comet comes in, and this baby is moving very fast. And that's another indication that these comets can come into the solar system so fast to make your head spin. That's why, you know, this could have been a big comet. If this were a giant planet-sized comet nucleus discharging the solar capacitor with a really big comet tail and a really big solar discharge, it could have really affected Earth, because we were already connected into the solar plasma filament that was already coming out from the sun. Okay, so this happens on around about the 26th, I believe it started to become visible, started to actually discharge the solar capacitor. And moving on into the early part of the August 27th, this comet is coming in. As it's coming in, you can see the sun kind of pulsating and building up and starting the flares that were already there and for days, weeks, were very weak. All of a sudden become very, they become significantly more viable, increased energy coming out in them. And one of those filaments happens to connect in to this same filament that's connecting Venus and Earth. All of this very, very coincidental. Now, Earth just happens to have a full moon going on at the same time. And once again, extremely coincidental that all of these factors occurring at the same time. But why does the full moon affect Earth? Well, first of all, Earth is sitting out in the basically without any protection to the sunward side. The moon, in fact, discharging the solar capacitor, is its own, so to speak, it's a comet discharging the solar capacitor. But when it aligns up, gets behind Earth, the sun is out in front of us, here's Earth, and then the moon behind us on the anti-sunward side of Earth, the comet discharge of the moon and Earth add together. And so it's a direct electrical alignment, and this enhances the Earth's weather systems, the severe Earth weather system. So this is happening all at the same time. Not to mention, number five factor, we are in the August return current sheet, where the reverse current in the solar system is passing through this region, making it one of the most active regions of the solar system, or the active time, the merry, merry month of August, where we have the most severe weather, the peak of the hurricane season caused by the August return current sheet. There it is. We're right in the middle of that, factor number five. And also, by the way, we had some surprise auroras around the North Pole, around the South Pole, and as far south as into Alaska, south of the Arctic Circle. So those auroras were pushing down into the lower latitudes, visible if you had to happen to have very clear skies around that time period, August 27th, you would have seen some of the auroras out of the northern states. In fact, the northern United States, you would have been able to look north and see some of those auroras. And then this final factor, which is a rather, as it's not extremely unusual, but once again, to have this factor happen at exactly the same time where the solar wind comes in, magnetic reversal, neutralizes our protective magnetic space sheet, and starts to compress the upper atmosphere, which compresses the tropospheric weather systems and enhances the electrical discharges in the atmosphere that are driving these electrically driven storms. It's the vertical electric field that drives these storms, and certainly not warm water. It's just, that's one of the most ridiculous tier two fairy tale science. It's just absurd. But at any rate, it's the vertical electric field that drives all of these severe storms. So that's why across Africa, we were seeing tremendous storms in the Indian Ocean, all the way out to Madagascar, all the way back to Australia, north of Australia in the South China Sea. A whole wing of this severe storm activity leading up to Japan, along the China and the South China Sea, then out into Malaysia, the South Pacific, the South Pacific Islands out there, Melanesia into the South Pacific, and then in the Central Pacific, these three major storms. You come in on the west coast of Central America, tremendous storm activity where you really don't see that much. You might see a hurricane forming there, a single cell, but literally hundreds of small, very powerful storm cells all across Central America, throughout, across the Yucatan Peninsula, out into the Caribbean, and of course the three hurricanes that I named out in the Atlantic. So the Atlantic is completely on fire. So I've gone kind of around the world. Then plus you have the Antarctica was just blazing with storms. You've got the auroras at the North and South Pole. So Earth was basically under a six-way attack here electrically, and that was the cause of these storms. Joyce Riley asked me if I believed any of these were manipulated. It was more of a general question about the manipulation of weather, and absolutely, weather is very manipulated, and climate. But in this case, it looked like all of this had natural explanations, that they didn't have to do anything. If they wanted to create severe weather, they could just sit back and smoke a cigar, because this baby was going on all by itself, with all natural causes. At any rate, okay, just about a minute left of the show. Go back to the topic of carrot bars. I'm really excited about this. It takes about a total of an hour of time to sign up. All of that information is on my webpage. I have a subpage developed right now. And basically what this is, it's a method for you to purchase gold if that's what you want to do. You can actually enter this and for free, not pay a penny, and still make a commission. It's a very interesting setup. But if you want to make serious money, there's a bit of an investment, anywhere from $100 investment, up to about $1,600. So the serious people, the people who want to get going right away and have the available capital, start in at the $1,600 level. And some people just want to build it up as it goes, and they can actually enter it for free and let the system pay for itself. So there's all kinds of options. All the information on my webpage, jmccsci.com. I'm out of time. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.